From award-winning restaurant industry news to original analysis and reporting you can't get anywhere else, Restaurant Business Memberships provide you with the information you need to future-proof your operation. Subscribe now with code RBPODCAST21 for a free 30-day trial and get the tools you need for growth and success. The track record of international concepts expanding in the U.S. is not great. Jollibee Foods plans to change that. Hello, this is Jonathan Mays, Editor-in-Chief of Restaurant Business, and in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I speak with Maribeth Dela Cruz, who has been president of Jollibee North America since 2019. Jollibee Foods was founded in the Philippines in 1975 and grew into a global powerhouse with its flagship chicken chain Jollibee. The company has been in the U.S. since 1998 and today operates 66 locations here. Maribeth talks about the company's aggressive plans to expand that number and how the pandemic introduced U.S. consumers to the chain's bone-in chicken and the rest of its distinct menu. She also discusses challenges finding real estate and the ever-present labor problem. Please have a listen. Okay, I am here with Maribeth Dela Cruz. Maribeth, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jonathan. Nice to be here. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's, I think the best way to start this, why don't you just, for people who don't really know, tell us a little bit about Jollibee and its history.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, Jollibee is a company that originated back in the Philippines. So it started as a two ice cream parlor business that was, put together by our founder way back in 1978. They were newly married, so Tony Tan Kap Yong with his wife, Grace, just to start up a family, decided to put up a business, just two ice cream parlors. And, from 1978 to the present, which is now one of the biggest, the largest, and one of the fastest growing instant restaurant companies in the world. So it's gone a long way. It's, specializing in really good chicken joy, okay? It is a unique product. It's hand-breaded. That's one of our signature and our best-selling items. And we've grown, globally. So we have, huge presence back in the Philippines where it originated. But we have presence across Asia, also in United Kingdom, Italy, and even in EMEA. Okay, the Middle East. So we're also growing here in North America, both the United States and Canada. So it's really a growing business.
Mm-hmm. And you have 66 stores in North America, yes?
Currently, there are 66 locations, of which 49 are in the United States and 17 currently are in Canada. So Jonathan, we have presence in 12 states across the U.S. and 4 provinces in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jollibee has also also acquired Smashburger. Do you have any relationship with them at all or not?
Well, it's all under the umbrella of JFC North America. So they have their own management team and all the Philippine brands are the ones that are, being handled by them directly. So aside from Jollibee, there's also a Red Ribbon Bake Shop and also Chowking, which also has presence here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So what's the growth strategy for Jollibee in the U.S.? Where are you looking at and how are you planning to grow that way?
So at this point, we're only at 66 store count. So the first marching order is to grow rapidly across North America. So that's the first thing, is for us to aggressively open restaurants in locations where we still don't have presence. This year alone, we are planning to open 28 new locations. We've already opened 6 so far, and we're on track in terms of opening a total of 28 new stores this year. Our our goal is to get to 300 stores by 2024. And so you can really see that, this year and the next year, we're picking up momentum to really grow aggressively across North America.
Now, will you be growing company stores or franchise?
Currently, we are 100% franchise stores. Sorry, company-owned stores. The plan is, at some point, we will be franchising. So we've been getting a lot of inquiries on franchising. We're not there yet at this point, but we see that happening in in a few years' time.
Are there specific markets you guys are looking at? I mean, are you planning? I mean, you have locations in several states. I mean, are there just regions that you expect to grow more in or not?
Well, the growth strategy obviously is we're starting in locations where there are, high concentration of Filipino population. So obviously, those are states that are in the West Coast or somewhere in, New York, New Jersey. However, we've also been expanding the scope of our market. And so we really are looking at first saturating states with high Filipino concentration and then moving out into, the other states. So far, well, okay. And, we're looking forward to, moving also into the other states and the other provinces in Canada.
So now you guys you specialize basically in bone-in chicken, yes. And so that's been a fairly, I guess, an interesting market. I mean, the U.S. has a fair number of them, and you probably know that the bone-in chicken hasn't necessarily been all that strong in recent years. What differentiates Jollibee from, say, a KFC or a Popeyes or a Church's?
Okay, so first of all, our Chicken Joy, which we call our bone-in chicken, is the biggest chunk of our business. Okay, but aside from for almost 60% of our entire business, it's differentiated in itself. It's lightly hand-breaded, and it's best enjoyed dipped in gravy. But also, what differentiates our menu from our peers is the fact that, we have a more diverse menu. Because aside from Chicken Joy, we also have other favorites. Okay, like really a sweet style spaghetti, which is a fan favorite. Okay, that's the second best-selling item on our menu. We also have a peach mango pie made of real Philippine mangoes. We've extended our menu to include also our own twists on the chicken sandwich and the chicken tenders, products that mainstream are quite familiar with. So if you take a look at our menu, it's quite interesting, it's diverse, and it just really delivers a different flavor experience, okay, to the market. So in spite of the fact that maybe the chicken market or the bone-in chicken market in the US is kind of busy and saturated. There's our own place to the volume fried chicken plus the other menu items that we have.
Right. I mean, yeah, your menu has a pretty unique flavor to it. I mean, definitely. I mean, I don't think anybody is going to sit here and tell me that like there's like five types of Jollibees in the US. I mean, it's in a Jollibee's menu. I mean, especially once you get beyond once you get beyond the bone-in chicken, it's pretty unique, and clearly, and really, it's just very differentiated.
Have you been to my college, Jonathan?
No, I have not. I've only looked at your menu a few
Oh.
times, but you don't have one near me. I live in Minneapolis, so I am sort of
Oh,
limited
okay.
by what is nearby.
Yeah.
So feel free to build one near me.
I know, yeah. I mean, we're looking at locations also or sites eventually in Minneapolis and then well, Michigan. We're gonna we've already secured a location in Michigan, so it's still a hop away from Minneapolis, but but hopefully we'll get to where you are eventually.
Right. Well, if you get one in Chicago, I go there all the time.
Okay,
I know you
great.
have one in Illinois.
Yeah, we have a couple of stores in Chicago. And sometime this by fall, we're going to open a Chicago downtown location right across the cloud and the dune.
Right. Now, the how did the last year go for you guys?
You know what? at the start of the pandemic, it was like, you know, really quite scary and uncertain. And fortunately, we actually ended up with the year growing double digits. So we at first did suffer from a downtrend on the first month of the pandemic. But, you know, I guess with all the projects and activities and, you know, just actions that we did, we were able to pivot very quickly. And we ended up with double digit growth. You know, 2020 was also the year where, you know, we've been, for the past years, we've been quite conservative in opening new locations. But in the year of the pandemic, that was the year that we also opened 16 new locations across North America. So that helped boost our growth, okay? And, you know, even our rolling base of our same base stores, we were able to, you know, keep it at, you know, at flat, okay? So that, you know, it did fuel the total growth of the business for 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get the sense that, I know that a lot of people, it's last year, it seems like a lot of people really sort of rediscovered that, you know, the meal replacement chicken pretty well and ordered a lot of it, you know, because, you know, we're all apparently staying at home and ordering a lot of food for our families. And that would seem to kind of play into one of your strengths. Yeah.
Exactly. Good thing is that number one, 50% of our system are actually drive-through locations. So that was, you know, key to, like, you know, sustaining our growth. So whatever we lost on dine-in, you know, people really just shifted to the drive-through. Chicken, for one, is like, you know, a family meal, a comfort food. And, you know, people just really gravitated to fried chicken during the pandemic. It's, you know, a product that can travel well. And our marketing team actually focused on offering, you know, meals for the family or group meals so that, you know, and it's an easy thing for customers to just say, like, you know, I mean, you know, a family meal for dinner or for lunch and just really make it easy for customers to order at that point. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, for you guys, that sort of gives people an opportunity to sort of try who you, to try you guys. Yes. I mean, you know, as a sort of a challenger growing brand that, you know, you kind of gave you an opportunity to introduce yourselves to new customers in the U.S. Is that right?
That's right. You know, during the pandemic, we also pivoted and, you know, got into the delivery service. So that's another avenue where people are able to access the brand. You know, when the pandemic hit, we didn't have delivery yet. We were planning last year on launching our delivery sometime on the, like, you know, the third or the fourth quarter. But, you know, with COVID coming in immediately by the first week of April, we were able to launch already our delivery service. You know, it's a partnership with one of the aggregators. And, you know, quickly that allowed, you know, just really access not just to the core market, but also, like, you know, I mean, people really being able to access our products. And so I believe that, you know, the fact that we were able to get into the delivery service or do, you know, off-premise channel and delivery, that actually helped also in our growth. We also launched recently our online ordering. We're a little bit late on the game, but, you know, we still were able to put it into place, and it's now contributing to, you know, a chunk of our business. I mean, we continue not to operate our dine-in. We plan to eventually, okay, by next week, we'll be reopening our dine-in, you know, service already to customers. But, you know, throughout, like, you know, 2020 and part of 2021, it's really drive-through, our delivery service, our call-in pickup. It's really more off-premise.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I probably don't necessarily need to tell you this, but you know, brands that are based outside the U.S., the track record for concepts that, you know, started in like Europe or Asia or, you know, outside the United States has, you know, those that have tried, and there's been many, you know, Tim Hortons in Canada, companies like that, that have tried to expand the United States have found this market to be very different, very difficult. I'm not sure why. So how does, and it seems especially like with your plans this year that you probably have found the solution to that particular challenge. What do you think that has kept international brands from doing well here, and why would you be any different?
You know what? I think what we learned through our years of being here in North America is that, you know, you really have to be true to the, you know, to who you are, okay? Because oftentimes, like maybe other brands, when they get into other markets, they really go fast into changing to what they are and who they are. And I believe that, you know, consumers here in North America are not looking for, like, you know, the same old. The market has transitioned already, that they're open to, like, you know, new experiences. And so that's what we bring to the table, is, like, you know, the uniqueness of our brand. But at the same time, also having or being able to give options, okay, that are safe for them to, like, you know, probably try and access. And I guess these are the learnings that we have, you know, really amassed in the years that we have been here. You know, there was a period that, you know, even brand values struggled, okay? But recently, you know, we've been experiencing tremendous growth. And we started that with, like, you know, I mean, what are we known for? What are we, like, really, experts at? And we're able to deliver that. But the other thing is that I think that just really getting to the basics. Filipinos are known for their hospitality. And I think, you know, aside from ensuring that you deliver great tasting food, it's also making sure that it's, like, you know, a warm and like, you know, a fun experience. It's really delivering joy to the customers. And, you know, that's what we bring, you know, food that you enjoy in an experience that, like, you know, you would truly remember and you know, really enjoy just because of, you know, really the kind of environment and the kind of service that we're able to provide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that seems pretty, you know, you make a really good point on that. And I think that one of the sometimes brands end up changing themselves to fit a market too much, when in reality, you know, there's a reason why they were successful in the first place. And so, you know, keeping that foundation while certainly making some nods to the market. I mean, you know, you look at any brand in the U.S. that expands internationally and does so successfully, like McDonald's and KFC, you know, they have their base items. You know, they always have, you know, the fundamental items that's always been, you know, important to their brand. But then they have a bunch of other things that really sort of fit into the markets that they're going into. And I wouldn't imagine that would Jollibee, it would be any different.
Yeah. So true. You know, there are certain twists that we can do to products that are, you know, already familiar to the market. Okay. It's just that, you know, you just have to be able to communicate it in an exciting way so that, you know, you're able to engage the consumers. So that's really learnings that we got through the years. And I really truly believe that, you know, being true to yourself, being true to the brand is something that can, you know, bring success, because people look for something that's really differentiated than you.
So tell me, so one of the things you said that, like, half of your locations are drive-thrus, I would imagine you're probably going to be opening a lot more of those in the coming years. Yes?
Absolutely. So, you know, the first default whenever we look for locations are, you know, it's got to have a drive-thru, okay? But we know also that everybody else are looking for drive-thru stores, so it's getting to be very competitive. You'd think that maybe the pandemic would, you know, maybe soften the real estate market. It has not, okay? I mean, everybody's fighting for the drive-thru. So, you know, that's a real challenge. And so therefore, moving forward, we need to also have, like, you know, other formats, okay, outside of drive-thru. Like, you know, maybe, I mean, everyone's done this or trying to do this, like curbside, or finding really ways and means on, you know, just making sure that customers have other options to access the brand that's, like, really, you know, without contact or anything like that. But surely the drive-thru is something that, you know, is an up number one on the list, okay? Because people really just feel more comfortable going through the drive-thrus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what? You would think that we would be really sick of going through drive-thrus after last year. I am. I've waited way too long. I think spent entirely too much of my life waiting in drive-thrus over the past year. I'm not necessarily eager to do that, but I, you know, at the same time, I mean, I would be really naive to think that, you know, that the industry would shift dramatically back to dining in. I think that, you know, the drive-thru has been probably the biggest winner during the pandemic without a doubt. But, you know, as you said, I mean, literally everybody that I hear from, you know, has basically said that the real estate market for drive-thru sites is, you know, kind of rather insane. And, you know, and that it's kind of put some real pressure on companies that want to add that way. Yeah. Is it you seeing the same thing? Really?
I mean, it's highly competitive. You know, I mean, you negotiate for a drive-thru site and, you know, I mean, probably, you know, 10, 20 other chains are also negotiating for that location. So, yeah, it's been pretty challenging. But, you know, it's what the market needs. It's the convenience. And so it's also incumbent on the brands to really make sure that, you know, how do you really make your drive-thru operations very efficient? Because, like, as you said, like, you know, sometimes you get tired, like, you know, sitting in the drive-thru for so long, okay, just to get to the window. And so, you know, it, part of the plan is to make sure also that, you know, there's speed of service. And so there are process improvements that need to be put into place, technology that has to be integrated. So, you know, to make sure that, you know, customers don't have to wait out too long in the drive-thru. So those are all in the plans. Those are all being integrated into our operations. And just because we know that drive-thru is here to stay.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the companies that I know, for instance, are expanding rapidly with drive-thrus include like Starbucks, Wendy's, just about any restaurant, any large restaurant chain that is limited, Shake Shack, companies like that are all very big, Chipotle, and they're looking for sites they can drive through. Now, you, does that put you as a smaller concept, at least in the United States, does that put you at a disadvantage? Or do you have support from you know, from the home office to take more aggressive steps to try to get some of these sites?
There's certainly support from our mother company. I mean, the vision of JFC or Jollibee Foods Corporation or bigger companies to become one of the top five restaurant companies in the world. And North America has been called out as one of the major pillars in that, you know, achieving that vision. And so certainly it disadvantages us because there are other big players here in the United States in terms of negotiating for drive-thru sites. But, you know, we have the support of our mother company, and so that helps a lot.
Yeah. Let's talk about supplies. You able to get chicken? I hear there's a chicken shortage.
That's another major challenge, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about hiring and labor, and then there's also this issue on, you know, supply chain. But fortunately, you know, we have a very strong partnership with our third-party cell processor on our chicken. So we've had, like, you know, a long-standing relationship with them. And so, you know, I think that relationship that we have sustained all these years has helped in, you know, ensuring that, you know, we are priority in their supply. And so we've been very thankful. I mean, there were, you know, instances wherein, you know, it was really a hand-to-mouth thing, but fortunately we were able to resolve that with, you know, just the strong partnerships, not just with, you know, our vendor, but also then with our distributors. So they've been able to help us through all these challenges. But, you know, I'm not denying it, there really are challenges. I mean, there are items that we actually import from the Philippines, and, you know, with the trucking issues and with the port problems, like, you know, sometimes, you know, you have container loads that are sitting in the port and there's no truck to, like, you know, bring it to the warehouse or to the storage. So just those are the things. I mean, it's a supply chain nightmare, okay? And, you know, this one of the challenges that we have to navigate during this period.
What items do you import from the Philippines, and were you able to get them?
We're able to get you know, to continue. I mean, there are delays, okay, and so our supply chain team does have to make sure that there's enough buffer to you know, just to make allowances for all probable delays that may happen at port, okay. But peach mango pie, because our peach mango pie are made of real Philippine mangoes, so that's something that, you know, it's truly a special product. I just need people to try it, because it's like, you know, really, really very good pie. And so, yeah, I mean, those are one of the major things that we would bring into the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that peach mango pie sounds delicious.
It's delicious.
My wife is a pie freak, and she loves both peach and mango. And so I'm probably going to need to have her try that. So now you mentioned labor issues, and obviously labor is a big, big, big problem. I mean, what are you seeing out there? You get any sense that it's getting any better at all or not?
You know what? Eventually, I think it will even out, okay? Except that now some people, you know, have their, you know, the checks from the government, and so they're saving it out, okay? And not wanting to get back yet. Probably people still not comfortable going out and work just because of, like, you know, not everyone's fully vaccinated. It's been a true challenge, like, you know, even though there are markets actually wherein you need to offer higher rates compared to, like, you know, what the state or the federal government mandates, okay? Just because everyone else is strapped for labor, they would, you know, increase the offer. And, you know, the only other recourse you have is, you know, just to be as competitive if you really want to get the talents to run the restaurants. Because, you know, I mean, what is the restaurant if you're not able to operate it? And, you know, there are people who run it. And so you just have to, like, you know, be very competitive with that one. So we have resorted to, like, you know, being aggressive in terms of our rates that we offer, just so that, you know, we can have, like, you know, we're able to attract more, you know, employees to join us.
Super. Beth, this was awesome. I really appreciate you joining us this week on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jonathan, for this opportunity to talk about Jollibee. A pleasure meeting you. And, you know, I really do hope that, you know, one time we'd be able to, you know, enjoy our Jollibee products.
Oh, no, definitely.
And that should do it for this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, which, as always, was edited by Kimberly Kazmarek. Artwork by Nico Hines. You may find this and other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. You may also find them on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else you get your podcasts. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening. Restaurant Business members enjoy exclusive benefits from access to unlimited premium content and members-only research from Technomic to monthly recipe demos and private roundtables with restaurant business editors. Subscribe now with code RBPODCAST21 to access your free 30-day trial to unlock industry insights that will move your operation forward.